Occam's razor is a principle from philosophy. Suppose there exists two explanations for an occurrence. In this case, the one that requires the least speculation is usually better. Another way of saying it is that the more assumptions you have to make, the more unlikely an explanation. For example, two trees have fallen down during a windy night. Consider these two possibilities. One, the wind has blown them down. Or two meteorites have each taken one tree down and after striking the trees, each hit each other, removing all trace of themselves. The simpler answer is far more likely. And again, these are the principles of Occam's razor. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, I've had my video on the number plate at Christchurch deleted and a strike put against my channel, so that doesn't really surprise me at all. Sounds like I must have been onto something. And, well, I certainly seem to have stirred the hornet's nest with the report that I released last week on the Christchurch massacre. And I knew I would. I knew that there would be a massive amount of attack and a huge wave of trolling on the video because I was daring to think outside the official independent media narrative that the entire event is all fake and all CGI. And I knew I'd get it, folks. I knew I'd get trolled. I very much suspected I would, and they certainly did not disappoint me. There was wave upon wave of people claiming that I am the enemy, because that is the way it works. Now, folks, if there is one official line, you must go with the official independent line, or you are the enemy. And that is very telling, ladies and gentlemen. Very good. I put out a perspective, and most of the people that came to attack it, there was no discussion, no debate, no even attempt to debate or discuss. There was just wave upon wave of, "Shell, you do not think like me, so you are the enemy." Very, very interesting programs that people are running, folks, and it's become very apparent to me that the entire CGI, it's all fake concept that's been put out regarding Christchurch is damage control. And by saying that, folks, I'm not suggesting that everybody out there who is saying this are agents of the state. Not at all. I'm simply wondering where this information took hold in the first place. Who are the first people who put out the idea that it was CGI? Because that is where the damage control is coming from. And it is, folks. That's exactly what this CGI meme is. It's damage control, but honestly, it's a desperate attempt at damage control because the entire CGI meme can be pulled apart very simply, and all it takes is observation. And that is why they've banned the video, folks. And look, you know, it's several reasons they banned the video, but that's a huge one that they've done. I mean, everything's double prong, everything's triple prong, but that's one of the reasons they banned it, folks, because they don't want you to be able to pull it apart, because they need this CGI meme to run, and they need the entire truth community to buy into this CGI meme, because if we don't, they're screwed. It's as simple as that. You know, banning things backwards and forwards, and everyone's speculating about why it is, and there's always a back door to these things, folks. They're always putting the horse before the cart, and they're always giving you the double agent and double opportunity. You've got to always look behind your back and look what the left hand's doing while the right hand's doing something else. I mean, these people are real sneaky folks, and they do things, and they counter-do things, and then they counter-counter-do things, so it just keeps us guessing. But that's what it's all about, folks. They really want people to buy into this CGI thing, because if we don't, and we actually figure out what's going on here, these people are seriously screwed. And they don't want people to have access to the video so they can. I mean, you can do all this stuff, but then how do you show the video online? You try to show it to the people in New Zealand, even a little bit of it, and they go to jail. So how do you get around this loophole? They've done this so well. I mean, they're quite clever, but they're doing an incredibly desperate job of trying to cover this up. They really are. Because the more I look at it, the more I see that the Christchurch video very clearly reveals that the entire shooting was a government-run black op. They messed up so badly with this video. Like, so badly. I mean, the amount of evidence that you can find in this video is quite literally staggering, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm beginning to even wonder whether the shooter even realized he was streaming live on Facebook. Perhaps he thought he was on a video link up to his friends. I don't know. I mean, it's very suspicious that Facebook went down just before it happened and brought our attention to Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And I have to admit that's an issue. But the problem is that when I look at this video, even to release this as a fake video, it makes no sense. It makes no sense to release this as a shooter's video because there is so much in the video which gives away the fact that this was a black operation that was being run by a coordinated team. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe they did intend to stream it on Facebook, but maybe they didn't intend to stream everything that they did on Facebook. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't make sense because what you see in this video just gives too much away. And look, even if the official story was correct and it's just this random crazed white guy who went off and killed all these people, even that doesn't make sense because of all the markers that are in there which clearly indicate this to be run by a coordinated team. So, if the concept of it being CGI doesn't make sense because of all the markers that are in there, and the concept of it being Brendan Tarrant, just this crazed white guy, doesn't make sense because of all the markers that are in there. So, what choice are you left with? And even for it to be released as a fake video, people say it's crisis actors and CGI and there's all this. It makes no sense. Even if you're going to do it fake, even if you're going to set this all up, you would not do it in this way. It makes absolutely no sense at all for this video to have been released. And I think the entire CGI meme and the wave upon wave of trolls to shout down anybody who questions that narrative is incredibly revealing, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. And I have to say that after 10 years of being sort of online and on air and sort of part of what you would term the independent media, and doing so as a completely independent person, I mean, this is a completely solo act, folks. Everything you see from the Crow House, this is a one-man effort from a guy who lives in a shed. So I don't have any affiliates. I don't have any research teams or secretaries or website teams or anything like that, and no group of people, no association of people, and we all work together. I don't have any of that. I have no supporters, like, you know, advertising affiliation, or I'm not on any networks, or I'm not involved in any of that stuff. I'm a completely independent guy sitting in a shed. You know, and when I started doing this, I simply started doing it because it needs to be done. And I don't have anything for sale. I don't have any books to sale. I'm not trying to promote any products. I'm not trying to promote any agenda. I don't even focus on one particular topic. I just look at things and offer a perspective. And I don't have any stake in the outcome when I'm looking at them. I don't want any particular thing to be true. I just look at it and I let the cards fall where they may. And then I build the little castle that's left out of them and see what it looks like. So I don't really have any agenda except to find out what the hell's going on. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if I do have an agenda in this, then my agenda is to get to the truth and to create freedom because I want to be free and I need you to become free so I can be free because I can't be free until everybody's free. And that's just the way I think about all this. And doing that and suddenly being up there and being seen as one of the major voices that people sort of put you in this spot, you know, and so you start rubbing shoulders with these other guys. And since kind of being in this position to rub shoulders, something that I've noticed with the independent media very, very starkly is that there is always an official narrative that the independent media must follow. Certain people put out ideas and then everybody latches onto those ideas and they go with them. And anybody who questions those ideas suddenly becomes vilified, suddenly becomes the enemy. I've literally had people telling me that I'm a mole for the state because I'm not supporting the CGI all fake meme. And it's been a very interesting thing to watch, folks. It's been quite comical because not one person yet who has accused me of being an agent of the state for not supporting their CGI meme has yet explained to me how claiming this was a black operation run by a trained assassin, a coordinated team, was run by the government to take all your guns, was a clear black op. No one has explained to me how saying that actually supports the official narrative. But that's what they're saying. If you're not saying it's CGI, then you're supporting the official narrative. But again, no one has yet told me how saying it's a black op is supporting the official narrative, and yet I can explain to people exactly how saying this was all fake and all CGI and attacking anybody and calling them a shill if they question that narrative supports the system perfectly. Very, very interesting thing, folks. I think that they messed up so badly with this Christchurch massacre that they are absolutely terrified. People are actually going to look beyond the CGI argument and look at what is actually going on in this video. And that's something I'd like to explore a little bit more on the show today. And while I'm bringing you this information today, do of course bear in mind that what I gave you last week was simply an initial observation. So if I contradict any of the things I said on that show, it's simply because I've looked deeper and I've found out a little bit more and I've changed my mind on some points, because that's what happens when you research these events, folks. You make assumptions along the way, you explore possibilities, and very often you change your mind because other things reveal themselves. So please do bear that in mind. But folks, the more you look at this video, the video tells you what is actually going on at the Christchurch shooting. And truly, folks, what's going on is a black op, and it's actually quite unique because we have the insider's view of the black op, and we can see how it's run from this video. And that's why I'm questioning whether they meant to stream it on Facebook or not, or whether he even knew he was doing it. I mean, of course, there's the report that he posted on 8chan or 4chan or something that said, yes, I'm going to do this, and then he linked it up to his Facebook account or something. I mean, that's what I'm told. But I don't know. I didn't see it. And I'm going to put it out there because I'd seriously like to know. I'd like to have the question answered. Is there anybody out there who can actually confirm that for me, that they saw him on 4chan or 8chan, and they saw him say that he was going to hook it up to his Facebook feed? Because this is what I'm hearing, but I don't know anybody who actually saw it. And they can always put posts in 4chan or 8chan and backdate them the way they release news reports and backdate them to confuse us and all sorts of stuff, you know. So I'd like someone to confirm, if they can, whether he actually did do that or whether they were just told that he did that. So that's another point of investigation we need to clarify as well. You know, and again, think about it. I mean, if he had announced on 4chan or 8chan that he was going to be streaming this live on Facebook and then hooked it up to his Facebook feed before he did it, do you honestly think it would have been streamed on Facebook if he'd prior announced that it was going to be streamed on Facebook? I mean, this is a mass murder. You've really got to weigh the odds up and see whether this actually happened and whether it's possible. I mean, maybe it is, maybe it did. But these are the things we need to look at, you know, because creating that story and putting out the meme that it actually did happen is a great way to bring about censorship to 4chan and 8chan, isn't it? Which is exactly what they've done. So did that really happen, or are we just told that's what happened? We need to clarify these points. You know, it's just good to do this stuff, folks. The attention needs to be put on the details in this event. That's the thing. It's not about the CGI argument. It's not about whether it was fake or not. It's about what actually happened here and what the video can tell us. And honestly, folks, it shows us an awful lot, which tells us an awful lot about how these ops are run. Now, many people have heard about the old mind control experiments that the United States used to do. Many countries have done these experiments, MK Ultra, Manchurian candidates, and this type of thing. I'm sure many people have heard about this sort of stuff, but many people just put it into the realms of fantasy. You know, they've seen it on the movies, and they just think that's where it belongs in the movies. But of course, we know that's why they create the movies. That's why they put it in the movie to begin with, simply to create that air of disbelief in people's minds. And the more I look at this video, the more I begin to see that what we are witnessing here is an MK Ultra assassination. This guy's under mind control. You know, mind control and MK Ultra operations require a heavy dependency on light, color, and sound. It's very, very important. This is how they run. They're all trigger mechanisms with people. And the more I look at this video, the more I see all of the markers in the video to indicate that this is a very poorly run MK Ultra assassination. Haphazard and poorly run simply because of the information that is revealed to us by watching this video. I would even question whether the guy who was carrying out the shooting believed he was on some sort of training mission. Because when you look at how it's all run, it's kind of the way you would run into a building and clear a building if you're on a training exercise. If you were in the military and you were taken to a live set where you had targets and dummies and all this sort of stuff set up and you had to go in and clear the place and get marked for your time, that's what it looks like this guy was doing. And it looks like that more and more the more you watch the video. And so there's every possibility that this guy had been fully mind controlled and he'd been given visual and audio cues which would set off his program and cause him to go and carry out this assault. We all know MKUltra is true, folks. We know Manchurian candidates are real. And anybody who thinks that is not a fact, well, they really need to do some investigation, because it is. Many of these hits, I suspect, are carried out by trained assassins who are, in fact, MKUltra victims. And this guy wasn't trained very well. I mean, he was a bit of a klutz. He dropped his entire cache of magazines as soon as he got into the hall, and they scattered all over the hall. He had to keep running back for them, and made a lot of mistakes in the way he ran this operation, and that's why we've got so much insight into what's really going on here. But you have to be prepared to look at it with the right eyes and put all of this argument about CGI and all this stuff out of your mind for the moment and just look at what the video is showing you. I mean, the only reason I've even been going through the CGI stuff lately is because I think it's good to expose the fact that it's not CGI, all this stuff actually happened, because we need to get to the bottom of what the real story is, so we need to clear away the smoke and mirrors from this and get to what really happened. And I'd like to run through some of these points now, because I think they're important. And I'm sure a lot of people have pointed these points out to you before, but I want to point them out to you again and go through these and point out some markers that you can look for in the video to indicate what I'm saying, and also suggest some questions that I very much believe people should be asking. Looks like we're in for some rain too, folks, so I hope the rain doesn't disturb the monologue too much. You'll just have to bear with me on that one. Or maybe not. But anyway, looking at these markers, folks, when he first gets in the car, there's the PewDiePie reference. We don't really know what that's about, but it's a reference. It's there. When he first gets in the car, he drives out of the driveway, and right there on his left is a red car. Remember the woman in red from The Matrix? Red is often used in these MKUltra operations. There's a red car right there on his left as he pulls out. Then he goes out of the driveway, he turns left, and right there as he turns left, there is another red car, indicating that is the way for him to go. You'll also see that there's a number of turquoise cars that are parked in succession near the red cars. The turquoise cars often appear in random places along the way. But there is a large number of red and turquoise cars between him and the mosque that he's going to. Now, have a look at the map where he actually drove from and how far it was to the mosque, and ask yourself how many red and turquoise cars there are in Christchurch, and what the possibilities of this amount of red and turquoise cars being visible on that route is. Just think about that little question. That's one question that you need to put up there and ask yourself. But as he drives along, there's these red cars in succession on the left-hand side of the road. Occasionally there's one on the right-hand side of the road, but mostly they're on the left-hand side of the road. I mean, some of them may just be red cars, you don't know. But very often these are quite significant, because all the other cars around, I mean, most of them are just normal grey or white cars, but then there's these red and turquoise markers all the way. So he comes out of the driveway, red car, turns left, red car, he drives down the road a little bit, and just up in front of him, a car with a trailer on it pulls out in front of him, and on the trailer is a red flag, little red label. As soon as he sees that red flag, he turns on his music, and the music that he turns on is a Serbian fighting song. It's about rallying your strength and going off to have a fight. That's what it's about. I've got some Russian friends and they've translated it for me. That's what it is. The song is actually called, actually I can't remember the name of the song, but it's a well-known Serbian fight song. That's what happens when he sees that red flag. So that's his first signal, and that signal causes him to start the music. And again, ask yourself, folks, what's the chances of a 28-year-old Australian man putting on a Serbian fight song on the way to a mosque? I mean, I don't know too many 28-year-old Australians who are that into Serbian music. But anyway, that's the first signal. So he starts the music, and then the music triggers him to start running the training program that he's running. Well, even if it is the training program, I mean, whatever it is that he's running. And when I say training program, I mean, it may not be that he's going in there thinking he's shooting dummies. Maybe he just goes in and does what he's trained to do. I mean, we don't know. We can't speculate on stuff like that because we don't know the details of that sort of stuff. So he starts the music, then he turns left again, he drives down the road, and you start seeing these red cars, and they'll be parked in sequences, things like one red car, then two red cars, or two red cars parked together, then a red car, a white car, a red car, things like this are just along the way. Then he gets to this one section where I think there's two red cars and a white car, and he pulls over on the left, and he waits one full minute by the side of the road. While he's waiting on the side of the road, two turquoise cars appear to be very close to the same model. And that's the thing as well, folks. A lot of these cars appear to be very close to the same model. But while he's sitting there on the side of the road, two turquoise cars drive past him, one after the other. Now, the first one's turquoise. The other one is a little bluer than turquoise. Then just after these two cars go past, a woman, appears to be a woman, wearing tan pants and a red coat walks up. She's got some tag hanging around her neck, and he gives her a little bit of a signal, a bit of a wave with his fingers. It's kind of a, yeah, I'm your guy, sort of a signal. Like you're out there doing some shady deal in a car park and you want someone to know that you're the guy they've got to come and give the money to. That's sort of a wave. Just an acknowledgement. And as soon as she gets to the vehicle, he reaches down and he turns on the flashing strobe light on his gun. Then he continues on and he drives down the road. Again, we see these sequences of red cars. At one point, you'll notice that he drives past two red cars parked together on the left, immediately followed by two red cars parked together on the right. And at that point, he reaches down and he appears to flip the safety off the gun. Then when he gets to the block the mosque is on, the music in the car changes to British Grenadiers, a marching military song. So here he is, now he's marching off to war, and he drives down the road, continues driving down the road. Then he goes past a red car on his left, and you find that there's a man standing by a driveway in a full red tracksuit, like he's attending a pit stop or something in a racetrack. He's in full red, red pants, red jacket to let him know that's the driveway he turns into. He turns into the driveway, does a bunch of little shuffles around, does a U-turn at the end of the driveway, comes back out, parks in the driveway, directly pointing towards a red car. As he's doing that, he gives a little thumbs up to a couple of guys, three guys who are walking across the driveway. He gets out of his car, he takes his AR-15 with him, he gets a shotgun out of the back, then he walks out and he walks along the footpath, and then something very curious happens, and I think something that might be key. What happens when he walks on the footpath is there's two people standing on the footpath. Two people standing there at the entrance to the mosque compound. But it's not the people that he just let cross the driveway. Those people have gotten out of there and disappeared very, very quickly. Who we see on the footpath is a man and a woman that don't seem to bother him at all and don't seem to be at all bothered by him. This man wearing full body armor, carrying an AR-15 and a shotgun in full view. He just walks past these people. He walks towards the building, and as he's doing so, he glances to his left, and there we see the man who first walked across the driveway, and we don't know where the two people who followed him have gone. They've completely disappeared. And this was one man who looked like he was in a full black outfit, and another quite large man who looked like he could have been possibly wearing a grey suit. And these people have simply vanished. Like I said, they got out of there very quickly. Now, as he's walking up to the mosque, there's a car parked there on the left. Just a normal grey car. As soon as he walks past that car, a red marker becomes visible in the garden on the left. And as soon as he sees that red marker, he begins firing. And now we begin to understand why he didn't fire at the people on the footpath waiting at the entrance to the mosque area, and why they weren't particularly worried about this man walking past them covered in body armor and carrying automatic weapons. And not long after he does this, not long after he enters the mosque, the music in the car changes and goes back to the Serbian fight song. Not actually the same fight song, but it goes back to Serbian music. And the Serbian music continues for the entire time that he's in the mosque. Now, when he left the car, he left the car in the driveway with the hatch still up that he'd taken the guns out of, so he knew that there was no problem at all with anyone taking stuff from the car, and he still had the stereo in the car pumping out this music, so the music can be heard the whole time, so the music is keeping him in focus, and it's creating his timeline for him and giving him the focus he needs. As he gets to the entrance of the mosque and begins killing people, you notice that the music changes back to the Serbian music, and the Serbian music continues until he finishes shooting people. Now, what he does as he enters the mosque is he shoots the three people who are standing in the entrance. That's the first thing that he does. He lets off 9 shotgun rounds into the back of these three people. Then as he moves forward, in amongst the screaming, you can clearly hear someone say, "Watch your back," which would suggest that there may have been someone standing behind him just out of camera shot that we couldn't see, maybe giving him a warning to look not just ahead of him, but somewhere else. So he shoots these three guys in the entrance to the mosque, shoots them all in the back. Now, all of these three people go down. One guy wearing dark clothing falls to the right into the shadows, and it's very difficult to distinguish any detail on this man, so we have to put him in the too hard basket. The man on the left, who has been shot in the back, falls left onto the door frame and lands on his back. So we don't see any of his wounds. His stomach is visible to us. His shirt's pulled up a little bit, probably from the shotgun blast and the fall, and he's lying on his back. And the third man is crawling down the hallway towards the center room. The man on the right is very likely dead. The man on the left obviously isn't dead because dead men don't bleed, and this man slowly bleeds over the period of the shooting. When he comes out of the mosque the first time, we see the blood is pulled a little bit. When he comes back, it's pulled a lot more. So this man bled out later. Dead men don't bleed. And this is one of the disinformation memes that's been put out there, the fact that the blood appears later. So a set dresser came out and put it. No, folks. It's just that if you're still alive, you bleed. I mean, the man we're talking about was a reasonably large man, so it would have taken a reasonable force to just drop this guy and kill him on the spot. And he was obviously shot in the back. He would have been lying there completely traumatized, but not completely dead. So his heart was still beating, and the blood would have kept pumping out of his body until his heart stopped beating. That's just the way it goes. The guy who fell into the dark on the right probably didn't bleed out much because he was the one who took most of the blast, I would assume, and he may have died quite quickly. I mean, we just don't know. These are details we can't confirm or bother arguing about. But this happens. These three people go down. Two guys are down. One guy's crawling away. We hear a woman scream. And this is another piece of disinformation we can clear up. Somebody has suggested that this is a mistake, that they've overlaid the wrong soundtrack when they were setting it up because there's no woman present. But this is easily clarified as well, because as he moves forward, he shoots the guy in the hall, and then he gets surprised to find a woman in the room next to him on the right, who is running across the room to try and get out the side entrance to the front and escape. So this very much accounts for the woman screaming. It seems very reasonable that if a woman was in that room and she heard 9 shotgun blasts and saw a man crawling past her covered with blood, she would very likely scream while everyone else was screaming. And there were screams and cries. There was noise that came from these people when they were shot, ladies and gentlemen. This is another piece of disinformation that's been put out there. You know, why can we hear women's screams at the start there? And another one is, why are all the people huddled in the corner in the main room? Well, folks, if someone had just come running into the mosque with a shotgun and a machine gun, during that encounter at the entrance, you would hear the people in the main room screaming as they all scattered into the corners and cowered down and got as small as they possibly could and curled up into little balls to make themselves into as small a target as possible and sat there shaking and terrified, having an anxiety attack, hoping this evil was going to go away. Think about it. And don't say you'd climb out the windows because the windows were sealed. And don't say you would have run out that back door either because the back door was directly in line with the hallway. So if a gunman was coming down the hallway, the exit door directly facing the hallway is not somewhere you would be running to. And if the windows were sealed, which they were, these weren't windows that you could open, then the only choice that you've got is to cower in the corners, which is exactly what we saw. And this is another thing that I'm hearing, folks. People are saying, well, look, if I'd been shot in the back with a shotgun, I'd be screaming wildly. And I would suggest that they actually question that, because I would think that if you've been shot in the back with a shotgun, you would barely have the strength to scream. And you wouldn't be wasting energy bothering to scream. You would be groaning and whimpering and crawling away, precisely in the manner that we saw from the men crawling away in the hallway. I mean, we've got to be realistic about this, folks. I mean, honestly, you've been shot in the back with a shotgun. Do you really think you're going to have the energy to scream? And is that what you're really going to be thinking about? Because no, you're going to be badly wounded and likely groaning in a state of near death. So these sorts of things are very easily clarified if you look at the video, and we can really see what's going on here. But at this point, after he shoots the man crawling up the hallway, he's actually quite surprised to find someone in the room to his right. Watch your back, eh? So he turns to take a shot at her, and he misses, because while he's firing at her, you hear a noise, and it's only a slight noise, but you hear this noise, and he drops almost his entire cache of magazines on the floor of the hallway. You'll notice that he had a cache of magazines. If you go back to the beginning of the video, when he was first getting into the car, he had an entire cache of magazines on his chest. In chest and stomach area, this was all loaded up with magazines. Well, a lot of them fell out when he got surprised by the woman on the right, and they all bounced all over the floor in the hallway. One of them, very obviously, bounced up to about 10 feet away from him. And this is another thing that people are putting out there, saying, look, there was a magazine halfway up the hall, how did it get there? Well, I would ask the question, have you ever dropped anything weird shape and had it bounce and actually land 10 feet away from you? Because I've done that many times in my life. And if he dropped a whole bunch of magazines, it seems very reasonable to assume that one could have easily bounced halfway up the hall. And remember, he had to keep running back to the hall for magazines to reload his gun the whole time through the event. And it would also explain why he looked down at that magazine and sighted it on the way into the main room, just to identify it so he could come back and retrieve it later, because they just all scattered everywhere. Why do you think he kept running back to the hall? A lot of people are suggesting it was too much like a video game because he kept running in and out of the hall. Well, what he was doing, folks, is he was running back to pick up one of the magazines because he dropped them all. And he mentions that in the car as he's driving away. There I am in the middle of a firefight, and I had to run back and pick up a clip because he dropped clips when he got surprised by the woman on the right. So a lot of these things are worked out, but this is what we're seeing here. But you need to ask yourself, if you were setting up a CGI or an animation, or you were faking this or bringing crisis actors or any of this stuff, if you're actually doing this, why would you create a scenario like that where he drops all his clips? And I mean, wouldn't you just do the take again? Think about it. And that woman running out of the room on the right when he walked in, you need to remember that he didn't actually hit her. She got through the doorway and she just disappeared from view. So what happened with her? And we'll come back to her a little bit later, but I think it's break time here, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on here today. But don't go away, because I've got plenty more to come. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So continuing on, after he has this encounter with the woman in the room on the right, he continues down the hall. He shoots someone who's running across the entrance to the hallway, confirming again what I said before, that if you tried to get out those entrance doors at the end of the hallway, you would have been shot by a man with a machine gun. So that's no exit that anybody would have run to. He then runs into the main room and he starts shooting at the people that are all huddled in the corners. And you've got to understand, folks, these are families that are in here. And if you were in there with your child, you probably would have been like that. You would have been there with your child huddled beneath you, would have been trying to shield your loved ones. Husbands would have been around their wives. Parents would have been trying to secure their children. People would be trying to get behind each other. You'd be terrified. And you wouldn't be screaming. That's not what happens in these situations. I don't care what Hollywood says. But that's what happens. He goes in there, he starts firing rounds into people in both corners of the room, and he's constantly running back for magazines the whole time. And he's a real klutz. Like I said, he dropped all his magazines. Halfway through these volleys that he's giving to these defenseless people in the corner of the main room, he drops the strobe light off his gun, and that's just left there flashing against the wall. I mean, it's just pandemonium. He doesn't really know what he's doing at all. And here's another question that people are having about this moment. People are saying, well, why aren't I seeing bullet holes in the walls? And what I would say here is to ask this question. Go back to sections of the video where he's actually out in the car park in broad daylight and look at the number plates on the cars. These are black letters on white plates. These are stark contrast numbers on number plates. And tell me if you can read or even identify clearly any of the number plates. Some of them just look like a blur. You just kind of see a grey area where the numbers would be. And then tell me if, at that resolution and choppy bitrate and crappy bandwidth, would you expect to see small bullet holes in a plaster or gyprock wall inside a building out of direct light? As I said, at that resolution on a cell phone camera strapped to a guy's head who is constantly on the move and is having to struggle with exterior light coming through the window and him on the move all the time, jumping around. I mean, you're not going to see the bullet holes, folks, because the video isn't clear enough and he's never staying still long enough for the camera to ever be able to possibly get a focus on anything like that. I mean, if it can't pick up a number plate outside, which is a stark contrast, black on white, in broad daylight, then how is it going to pick up a bullet hole in a plaster wall inside with external light shining in? You know, think about what you're saying. So anyway, he's shooting people in the room. At one point, he goes back for a magazine and someone from the left corner attempts to tackle him and take the gun from him. But he's quick and he turns around and he cleans this guy up, runs back into the hall, pops a couple of headshots into him, secures the magazine and runs back into the room. So he's there and he's in the room and he's still shooting. And at one point, we see someone who'd been hiding in one of the side rooms attempts to run across the room and escape through the front entrance. So he quickly steps in line with the hall and he takes this guy out as he's getting to the front door, shoots him in the head. When he exits the mosque, we can see this man lying in the doorway next to the other two people that are dead there, and we can clear up another piece of disinformation that someone has said, oh, look, they added all this blood that wasn't there before, and the man in the doorway turned and lay the other way around and pulled his shirt down. Well, no, it's a different man, and this is the man who was shot in the head trying to escape across the center room, and you actually see him get taken out in the video. But anyway, this goes on and on. He does this stuff, and he's running in and out of the room, shooting all these people. Then he goes back for a magazine, and then he quickly runs outside, and he points a gun at the car that's parked out there because there's someone sitting in the car, but the person in the car is wearing red, so he doesn't shoot them. But he notices that someone is escaping from the corner of the compound, so he runs out to the street, and he shoots down the street to take out the escapee that's got out from the corner of the compound. The question that needs to be asked is, who told him that this person was escaping from the corner and he had to get out there quickly and shoot them? But after he does that, after he shoots down there and he cleans that guy up, he looks around and he fires three or four shots down the other direction, and it's kind of unclear why he did that. We can only speculate. It could simply be because he saw someone moving. And here's another little piece of disinformation that's been spread about this little occurrence as well. When he's standing out on the footpath, the bullets appear to disappear in midair. And again, this is due to choppy bandwidth. And the person that's put out this disinformation has been very clever because they've put out a zoomed-in piece of video which focuses on the gun and the ejecting shell casing, and you literally see it disappear in midair. But because it's zoomed in, you don't get to see the wider shot. Because if you could see the wider shot, you also see the shell casings appearing on the ground just a few frames later. And again, with this choppy bandwidth and low bitrate and the speed that these shells are moving, there's no reason to expect that the camera would catch every frame of these shells in flight. I mean, go and fire a few rounds off, folks, and see if you can catch the flight of the shells with your naked eye. And then tell me whether you think this bandwidth would have caught up with it. But you do see all of these shells appearing on the ground near the wall, near the entrance to the mosque. So that's another piece of disinformation you can clear up very easily by simply looking at the video yourself. Now, what he does at this point after firing at this man, this escapee, is he goes back to the car and he changes guns. At this point, he just drops the AR-15 on the ground because, of course, that's just part of the plan, to just throw your weapons down. The weapons have got the so-called terrorists' ideology written all over them, so this is very much part of the psyop to leave that ideology visible for the news cameras. So he grabs the other gun, and then he picks up a can of gasoline. He's about to go and torch the mosque, but then he suddenly puts the gasoline back, and he runs over to the other driveway, and he starts shooting a man who's escaping from the back corner of the compound. The question that has to be asked is, who gave him the call and told him that someone was escaping? How did he know that he had to drop the gasoline and run to the other driveway to catch someone that was escaping from the opposite corner of the compound? How did he know they were there? And here we can clear up yet another piece of disinformation that's been spread by the independent media that claims that he ran to the alleyway and shot at nothing. He didn't shoot at nothing, folks. He shot at a person, and you can actually see the body fall. And then he has a bit of a look around to see if there's any other escapees. And at that point, he says, looks like we don't get to burn today, boys. And he goes back into the building. At that point, the car that was out the front of the building is gone. The person in it has driven it away. And because it's moved, the red marker is clearly visible. And he goes back into the mosque and puts headshots into all the victims that are in the main room. One guy has actually sat up a little bit because he thought the gunman had gone. He takes him out first, and then he puts headshots into everybody else. This is called double tapping. And it is standard assassin MO. And after he does this, something else very interesting happens. He quickly runs to the front and catches an escapee, a woman who's running out the very corner of the compound near where he parked his car. And this very much appears to be the same woman who ran from the room when he first entered the mosque. So the question is, why didn't she leave immediately? Who held her back? And how did he know to run out and get her when he did? He runs out and he takes a couple of shots at her from near where the car was parked, near the entrance to the mosque. And then he runs out to the street to take a couple more shots of her up the street. And when he does that, we notice that there is a man in red standing against the wall. And he wasn't there before. We didn't see him when he was shooting at the woman, but now he's there. He's kind of run out from behind the tree and followed the procedure down to make sure that he got the woman. And now we can begin to understand why the woman didn't run off immediately, because someone was there holding her back from running off, someone who was managing that corner of the building and managing the front yard area, which also gives us the understanding of who it was who told him to watch his back as he was walking into the building. There was a guy in red who was managing the outside quadrant, and this is who we can now see clearly by the wall. At one point, when he's walking up to finish the woman off, he turns back and looks back down the street. A lot of people said, oh, he does this so that they can take the actor away and put a phony dummy there with a squib pack in it. This is 3 seconds that he does this, folks, of time, but it's 3 seconds that he looks away. And at that time, the woman who is reaching out, calling help me, and reaching to the street, rolls into the gutter, as you would do if your madman was running towards you with a gun. You'd be reaching out to someone, anyone, to come and save you. She rolls into the gutter, and he walks up, and he puts a couple of bullets into her head. But as he's turning around, you can see the man who was standing halfway down the wall has now moved back and is standing next to the tree, closer to the building. He didn't shoot the man because the man was wearing red. At that point, he gets back into the car. He puts the hatch down, and he drives over the woman's body and drives away. And then something very peculiar happens. Just a little bit down the road, he stops, and he starts shooting at people. He starts firing his shotgun through the front window of the car at a woman who's getting into her car. He fires 3 shots through the window, and then he moves forward a little bit and tries to fire at a man on the left as well, smashing the side window of his car. And you've really got to question why he did this. I mean, it doesn't seem like it was part of the main op, and it certainly doesn't fit with the main narrative as well. As a crazy white guy who wanted to go and kill Muslims, this guy just starts shooting people randomly with a shotgun as he's driving down the street. So what really happened here? And I would suggest he did it simply because the people weren't wearing red and his wiring screwed up. He just saw targets and they weren't wearing red, so he thought he had to shoot them. Maybe he thought it was part of the training course. Maybe he just hadn't been switched off yet. But like I said, I think his wiring was a bit screwed up because he messed things up so badly and did so many things I don't think he was supposed to do. And that's why I'm saying this was an MK Ultra assassination gone terribly wrong. They really messed this one up, folks. But you can only speculate why he stopped and shot those people. It's simply something that he did. And here we have another piece of disinformation. People claiming that he shot through the windscreen of his car and it didn't damage the windscreen. The windscreen should have shattered. And the entire concept is completely ludicrous. He was using blanks. And this shows that all the guns in the car were plastic. Well, folks, that's completely untrue, because if you look at the windscreen, you can watch yourself and you will see that you can occasionally see one of the bullet holes over the bonnet. It's very, very hard to see because the bonnet is white and the bullet hole is clear through glass, and the glass went quite frosty where that bullet hole hit, so it's very difficult to see. But there is another one that you can clearly see at the top right of the rearview mirror that pokes its head up now and then. And you can also see a crack across the windscreen. And people who are saying, well, it should have smashed the windscreen out, it's a shotgun. Folks, a shotgun will not shatter a 7.6mm laminated safety glass windscreen. With a shotgun blast through a windscreen like that at close range, you would expect to see a 2 to 3 inch hole in the windscreen. And what we see poking up above the rearview mirror is consistent with what we would expect to see. There's also people saying, well, you can't see a smashed windscreen in the arrest video, but actually you can, folks. You can get one frame of that video where you can just get the resolution high enough to actually dimly make out one of the bullet holes in the windscreen. And I'd put it to you again, folks, can you read the number plates on the car in that shot? And if you can't, then can you tell me that you should seriously expect to see a bullet hole through glass at that resolution at that distance? And when you look at the arrest shot, the clear arrest shot that was put out by the media, the holes in that match the holes in what we see in the arrest video, which are also consistent with what we see poking up above the rearview mirror in the live stream video as well. So people really need to think about what they're saying. Another thing I'm hearing about the cars is, well, it's a different car to the one I saw in one photograph. And there is a photograph of a different car, but this is the car from the second mosque. And I would suggest that that car that you're looking at from the second mosque is the same car that was parked out the front of the first mosque that drove away halfway through the proceedings and revealed the last marker for him to go in and do the double tap. It all kind of fits together, folks. A lot of this stuff people are telling you it's fake are provably false claims. And I'm not your enemy here by saying this. I'm simply someone who's a little bit observant, and I've been looking at this video and trying to figure out what's actually going on. And what I'm seeing is nothing like what people are putting out. And I tell you, folks, when you look at what is really going on, it becomes incredibly apparent that this whole CGI, it's fake meme that's been put out is damage control. Poisoning the well, because that's the way COINTEL works. You know, if there's a leak, you don't try to cover up the leak. You embellish the leak to make it unbelievable so that Joe Public will never buy it and will throw the baby out with the bathwater, and the independent media will never be able to tell them what's going on because all of the information they get is so confused and convoluted because of the conspiratorial mindset that's been programmed into the world's so-called truthers. And this whole CGI, it's fake meme has been put out as damage control so people don't see what this video is actually telling them. And they don't look at the peripheral vision that's happening in this video. They're all focused on the shell casings, and they're focused on the blood, and they're focused on the bodies, and they're focused on all of this stuff which they cannot prove either way. And they're not looking at what is actually going on around this guy while all this stuff was going down. You know, if you look at it through the right eyes, this video is a gift to us, ladies and gentlemen. It really is. It shows how it's all done. And when you really look at the bigger picture, and you think about the fake news meme that they're putting out, they're trying to lock down everything. And now you've got the whole independent media out here saying, oh, this is all fake, and it's all CGI, and it's all crisis actors, and there's no blood, and there's no victims, and there's no bodies, and there's no bullets, and there's no shell casings. How do you think that makes people out there in the world feel about the independent media? How do you think we're ever going to get to these people and help them see the danger that we are in as a world if they think we're all nuts? But they come and look, and suddenly people arguing over whether it was fake, whether it was this, whether there was blood, whether there were bullets, whether it was this, whether it was that, arguing over the world, whether it's round, whether it's flat, whether it's a hologram, whether it's concave, whatever it is. Listen, folks, your government wants to kill you. The world is run by criminals. Do you get that bit? Now, can you just put your belief system down for a little while, stop trolling people who don't think like you, and pay attention to your surroundings? And that's all I ask. That's all I've ever asked. Oh, no, but you don't think like me, Max, so you must be the enemy. Grow up. Just grow up. You know, what are you people arguing about all the time? Just because you think things are fake and someone else thinks it's real, I mean, how do you know? And all they had to do was fake Sandy Hook. That's all they had to do, was stage Sandy Hook, stage the Boston bombing, stage a couple of fake drills, call them real, and everybody took the bait, hook, line, and sinker, and now everything's fake, and there's never any victims, and nobody ever dies. Well, go to Yemen, folks, and tell me that nobody ever dies. Look at what's happening to the world while you're all sitting out there squabbling over your own egos, and think about what we're really facing, and think about what you're doing. I mean, seriously, how hard is it for people to actually think for once in their lives? Please. You know, when I began this work, this talking online, when I began working in the independent media, I did so because it needed to be done. I did so because I wanted freedom. But the independent media has turned into a circus. And, you know, if you're someone out there who's trying to set yourself up as an expert on this or an expert on that or an authority on this or on whatever, and you're out there trying to sell your wares and sell your DVDs and make a name for yourself and get on radio interviews and do all this stuff, all I can say is get out of the way and let people who actually care about this get out there and do something, because this is not a game. This is not a popularity contest. This is not about self-gratification. It's not about self-aggrandization. It's not about making a name for yourself. What this is about is freedom, and it's about finding the truth of what is going on in this world. and the independent media has turned into a circus. It's quite literally been infiltrated so much that it's turned into a freak show. And with all of the disinformation that's been released about this Christchurch massacre, it's downright embarrassing to even be part of the independent media. Now, you know, when I look at all of this stuff, I look at all of what this video shows me, and I'm not saying that what happened at Christchurch was an MKUltra assassination with a programmed slave who was acting like a killing machine. He was simply programmed to do what he did like a robot. I'm not saying that's what happened. The evidence is saying that's what happened. The video is saying that's what happened. I'm not saying it's a government black op. The video is saying it's a government black op. I'm just looking at it, and I don't have an agenda. I don't care what the official mainstream narrative is. I couldn't give a rat's butthole what the official mainstream narrative is. I'm here to think for myself, and that's what I do. I'm not going to just toe the official party line and go where the general consensus says I should go. I'm going to think for myself, because that's what I've always done. This is a very, very serious situation. This event in New Zealand was carried out by the government, provably carried out by the government, and I'll put it right out there now, Jacinta Ardern, you are a liar. And the people of New Zealand, you need to wake up, because your guns are being taken from you under false pretenses by your lying Prime Minister, who is very much aware of what happened. I'm sure she can't be stupid. I mean, if I can be sitting in a shed and look at this video and I can figure this out, then you can't tell me the police, the military, the politicians and all these people are so damn stupid that they can't see this themselves. And that's why this video is banned. So it's time the people woke up to themselves, and I'll probably get another strike against my channel, and this video will probably be deleted. I mean, I'll probably disappear soon, folks, from YouTube, because they're not going to want me to be saying this sort of stuff, but I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to keep saying it anyway, and even if they come and arrest me and put a gagging order on me and tell me I can't speak, I'm going to open another channel, and I'm going to continue to speak. And I don't care if the New Zealand government says that you can get 10 years for watching this video. They're only saying that because they know that if anybody in New Zealand does watch this video and figures out what's going on, they'll probably get 50 years if they don't get lynched. That's why they don't want you watching this video, folks. It's not because it contains graphic violence. It's because it exposes the fact that the government did this. Jacinta Ardern, you're a liar. And you and all of your cohorts need to be taken to jail and put there for a very long time. And that's the situation that we're in the world today, folks. And that's why I've put so much focus on this video. Jim Fetzer has said that he will challenge me to a debate on all of the complete disinformation he's been releasing, and so I'm looking forward to that. I'm hopefully going to do that next Friday. And I'm going to pull everything Jim Fetzer says to pieces, folks, because everything Jim Fetzer has been saying in his reports that he's been releasing about this event can be proven to be outright lies. Well, there's some truth in there. That's what they do, folks. They always put the truth in there and pepper it with disinformation. That's how they keep you in there. If there wasn't truth, then you wouldn't go there to begin with. But anyone who's saying this is CGI, you really need to wake up to yourselves. This wasn't CGI. People died. Real people died. Real families went in there and they suffered a terrible, horrible death. And I would really like to put my heart out there for those people right now. I believe 20 of those people were Palestinians that were killed in that room. Maybe they were even brought there to be killed. People ask why they were piled in two corners in the room. Well, what would you do, folks? You're in there praying. You'd go and hide in the corner of the room and you'd hope this madman went away. Now, people say, oh, they weren't screaming. Really, would you waste the energy screaming in that situation? You'd be terrified, folks. Yeah, sure, if you're in a concert or you're in a big room full of people and, you know, you're in a nightclub or something, you might get some screaming. But if you're in a mosque, if your family's in a mosque like this, you're probably absolutely terrified, and screaming is going to be the last thing you'd think of. People say, oh, there should have been blood flying around the room. There should have been plaster flying off the walls. You know, you people watch too many movies. You watch too much Hollywood. You know, there should have been this and there should have been that. Well, I ask you a question. Have you ever shot up a whole bunch of bodies huddled in a corner? No? Well, then don't even think to presume to begin to think to even begin to tell me what you think you should have seen, because you weren't there and you've never done that. And what Hollywood tells you you should have seen is a complete crock. Wake up, people. wake up people and wake up to the opportunity that this video provides us with if we can get a little focus and clear away all of this smoke and mirrors and noise and fake and CGI rubbish that is being spread. This is a black op. It was a black op that we managed to get on film. We have inside information here and we can tear the whole government down with this because it shows that they did it. That's why they don't want you to see it. People should have been running. People should have been screaming. What do you know? People say, oh no, fight or flight. Well, what about freeze? Flight or fight or freeze? Sometimes you just want everything to go away. And that's what happened, folks. These people were murdered in cold blood by a programmed assassin. And I think that there's still more to be revealed by this video if we can get a better copy of it, if we can find some way to enhance some of the things that we're seeing here. And something I'd really like to know is, who is the man in the grey suit who walked past the driveway? There was a major terrorist drill going on that day in New Zealand, people from all over the world. And when I look at the gait and the size and the stance of this man, I don't know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'd sure like to know where Benjamin Netanyahu was on that day. And if anybody knows how to enhance that section of the video, or if anybody has a higher resolution copy of this, I think you owe it to the people of the world to release that information, because we need to know who this guy was. We need to know who these people were. Why did they disappear so quickly? I would suggest they disappeared because they weren't wearing red, and they knew that if they weren't wearing red, they would be shot. But that is it for me now, folks. We've reached the end of the show, and I don't expect this video to last on YouTube, and I don't expect my channel to last if I continue to pursue this line of reasoning, because I don't think they'll like it. But I'm going to do it anyway, ladies and gentlemen, because the truth needs to be told. I don't care about my channel. I don't care what they do to me. I don't care about the waves of trolls. You can just come and abuse me because I don't think like you all you like. I'll continue to report what I see, because that's what I do, folks. I'm just a guy in a shed. I don't have an agenda. I don't have to follow any line. All I do is examine and report what I see. And when I look at this video, well, what I've brought to you today on this show is what I see when I look at this video. And that's the thing. And when I started putting all this stuff out saying it's not CGI, I'm not doing it because I want to prove that it's not CGI. What I'm doing is looking at what I see. And what I want is I want to know why the people that are claiming this is CGI are lying. Why they are putting this out there. Why they are claiming they've examined the video when obviously they haven't. That's what I want to know. And I don't really care what anybody else says about it. I really don't. If you've got a view and you've got an opinion, hey, put it out there or come and debate mine or whatever. And I'm not saying any of my stuff is right. I'm not saying that what I've said here today is absolutely correct. I don't know. All I'm doing is reporting on what the video is showing me. You can take it on board or don't. It's up to you. But that is it for me, folks. I'm now completely out of time. Thank you to all the people who send me so many kind emails. Look, I really can't keep up with the emails at the moment, folks. I'm getting so many emails. It's just absurd. And I'm just a one-man show, so it's very, very difficult to keep up with all this stuff. But thank you for the support you're showing me anyway. Thank you very much to my Patreon supporters. I couldn't do any of this if it wasn't for you. So I can't thank you enough for that. And please take very good care until I see you next week. If my channel is still here next week, in Lakesh.